You're listening to the Right Turn Radio podcast. Do you notice, as I've been noticing, as I get older, the winters are harder to deal with?
I think this is a very tough hard winter.
But speaking of getting older, you and I qualify.
Segue.
You like that? You and I qualify as baby boomers because apparently, 1946 to 1964.
46 to 64.
So post World War II, the generation that
everybody came back and had kids.
What they did? Oh yeah, they had kids.
They had lots of kids.
And. So we're considered baby boomers, although I'm a bit older than you.
Yeah, a month.
and so we're also a huge population. I mean, that's why they were called the baby. It was called the baby.
Yeah,
I mean,
if you look at maps, it's like, you know, they would figure the average number of children born to women. It was like, you know, under two, four. You know, it's this huge lump. So there's this huge cohort of people. Aging right now.
Aging and taking along with them the same...
All their bad habits.
And so today we're going to be talking about baby boomers and addiction. And we're going to be talking with our guest tonight is Dr. Barbara Krantz, the medical director at the Hanley Center, a nonprofit residential substance abuse treatment center established 30 years ago almost in Palm Beach County, Florida. The Hanley Center is really a trailblazer for the recovery industry, especially as part of the Karen Treatment Centers network. And they're really doing a lot of work with treating boomers and addictions and stuff like that. And Dr. Krantz is the medical director there. Welcome, Dr. Krantz, to Right Turn Radio.
Thank you, John, and thank you, Abby, and very happy to be on your radio show tonight.
Well,
this is a subject dear to my heart.
Yes, John was really, he came back raving about what a wonderful speech it was that you gave. He went to a conference you were at. And, you know, people talk about the baby boom. Can you kind of, and this whole idea that there's this tidal wave of addiction and the numbers are doubling. And can you tell us what's really happening? Who are the baby boom? What are kind of, you know, what are you seeing?
Well, like both of you already said, the baby boomers by definition are those born between 1946 and 1964. So that is a large cohort. Probably about, 78 million strong Americans? I mean, so it's a large part of our population. I know that the oldest of us, and I am a boomer.
We are too.
Yeah.
The oldest of us actually turned 65 in 2011, and for the next 16 years, 10,000 people will cross that threshold every day.
Wow.
So it's a large cohort. What impressed me is we'll actually make history by 2050 because we are expected to outnumber children age 14 and under for the first time in history. So it really is a large population. But we're seeing, you know, I've been in the addiction field since late 1988. We're seeing so many more treatment admissions in this age group, and they really have doubled in the past 10 years.
Well, is it because why? I mean, when you say more treatment admissions, you're seeing, you know, twice as many people coming into seeking treatment. Is it because there are just that many more people who are in that cohort and they're just bringing their addiction with them, or is their treatment use escalating?
It's both, Abby. I mean, you're correct. I mean, there's a bigger cohort, so you're going to see more admissions. But I think if I remember the statistics correctly, there's about a 29% increase in addiction even in that cohort.
So what are you seeing? What drugs are you seeing?
Well, you know, when we think of the boomers, you know.
Yeah, we know. Picture 1975.
Right. You know, so you think of sex, drugs, rock and roll, Timothy Leary, Woodstock Generation. So we really have had, you know, less stigma associated with drugs.
Right.
You know, to begin with, that was our socialization, so to speak. So that coupled, I think, with the increased availability of medications. I mean, if you look at, if you really look hard at the stats, I think in late 1990s, there was a real paradigm shift that we saw in our culture. We had direct consumer advertising, and we notice that every day now. I mean, you turn on the television and...
Are you feeling like a little blue blob?
Yes. Sitting in the tub? No. But I mean, so you turn on the television, and everything that you could have wrong with you, they have a drug for. You know, I call it better living through better chemistry. But we're kind of introduced to that in Woodstock. And then the Joint Commission actually made physicians in late 1990s put pain as a fifth vital sign.
Right.
Yeah.
So that actually increased the prescription of drugs. And that's another whole story, because it's not like we're, I mean, we could be doctor shopping, yes, but usually it's the non-medical use of a prescription drug. It's like, you know, you're taking it from somebody else or your parents' cabinet or right. whatever.
So you don't, it's not just that, you know, people used to take Miltown and Seconal and all that stuff. And now that generation is now considered elderly. It's that there's more actual use.
Yes. It's both, Abby.
Mm-hmm.
And the road was paved by this kind of freer idea of that this generation was really the first generation to be okay with the use of illicit drugs. You know, and the experimentation of drugs. So they're much more open to the fact that, you know, there's a pill for everything, like you said.
But I think also there is a pill for a lot more than there used to be.
Right.
I mean, depression used to go to bed. You know, now there's a lot of medications for it. Anxiety, you know, you used to have to drink yourself silly. Now there's prescriptions for it.
So. Right.
Right.
You talk about Farmageddon, Dr. Kranz.
Did you make up that term?
I did.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Did you trademark that term?
I put it on, I was doing a PowerPoint for our pill mills in Florida. I'm from Florida.
Oh, yes.
Yes. So it was, I put a, like a skeleton head on the top of my presentation and put pills filling in his face and everything. Because it was really very appropriate. I mean, I'm sure you guys know that, you know, our unintentional drug overdose deaths, even in Palm Beach County, where I'm from, but in Florida as a whole, I mean, steadily increased in the past until about 2012. So, I mean, we had a serious problem. In Palm Beach County alone, we were looking at one person every 26 hours dying.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Unintentional drug poisoning. You know, that was more like than homicides, suicides, and motor vehicle accidents combined. So it was an impressive number of people.
Yeah, I mean, I think we so the Farmageddon is that there's so much more, there's so many more pharmaceuticals out there, so many more medications out there. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. And the boomers have definitely picked up on that. Because if you look at the statistics like back in maybe 92 and then 2012, you'll see that alcohol mm-hmm. was really the most common drug of choice, if you can say drug of choice.
Right. Yeah. That's what we say.
But now that has gone down statistically, and prescription drugs have increased fivefold.
Fivefold, so, and is that among the boomer generation?
Or just
more so among the boomer generation, but across the board also.
How? What are the numbers as far as boomers? Do we have numbers as far as boomers for like the recent pain medication, opiate, the uptick in opiate addiction or opiate abuse compared to younger people? Has that gone up in the same rate or has it gone up quicker?
With the boomers, I would say, I don't have the statistics off the top of my head, But I would say the perception of prescription drugs being safe has really transcended all generations. I know the proportion of boomers, per se, that had reported alcohol, you know, initially. Now they're reporting there's about a fourfold increase with alcohol in combination with other drugs.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about baby boomers and addiction.
Us.
And we're going to talk about us, and we're going to have some more conversation with Dr. Barbara Krantz. You know, when we were on break, Dr. Krantz, there was a commercial for low tea. Supplement for low T. So
A, creating a problem, and B, solving it with a medication all in one.
That's right, but it's definitely aimed at the boomer generation. I think my T's kind of low today. So we wanted to talk a little more about the specific issues that are unique to this generation of people in treating addiction. What are the risks of addiction when you're a boomer at this age?
Well, if you actually looked at the risk factors across the board for boomers, males is one of them. Any kind of psychiatric comorbidity. So if the person has, addiction and then, or let me rephrase that. If a person has an anxiety or depressive disorder or post-traumatic stress, we see a higher incidence of addiction. Higher socioeconomic status. Perhaps that's because more disposable income, lower social supports. So if there's isolation, if they're, let's say, divorced, and then previous history of use, which really fits the boomer generation.
Right.
A history of using substances really as a coping strategy. I think those are probably the most common risk factors that we see.
So I mean, I'm trying to figure out, boomers do use more. Do they use more than the people underneath them as well, or just above them?
They certainly use more than the people above them. And I'm glad you brought that up, Abby, mm-hmm. because we also have a senior. We call it the older adult, which, you know, is kind of close to home now for me.
That's right, not us.
But Hanley had started an older adult program 15 years ago when they realized that they needed some age-specific treatment in order to better treat the patient. So we have the older adult program, and then we have, the boomer program, and then we have male and females 18 to... about 45, and then if they're 46, they'd be in the boomer program. And then Karen as a whole treats, adolescents. So essentially we could treat anybody from adolescents to, I think the oldest patient I treated was maybe 92.
Wow. We see it in our program as well. There's people who understand that a lot of the field of addiction treatment is filled with post-adolescent 18 to 28 year olds, and they don't want to come into a situation. Some of them don't want to come into a situation where they're 60 years old and, they don't understand that generation. They have different needs and wants. Can you give us kind of a quick sketch of somebody, of the kind of average, if there is one, of the average client that you see at the Hanley Center that's a boomer for addiction treatment?
Okay. I would say the average person walking in, males and females are pretty close, but there's more males.
Mm-hmm.
Coming in on alcohol, for sure, but not maybe their most abused substance. They're coming in on narcotics, on pain pills, where, they may have been that weekend warrior, and jog 10 miles a day, and now their knees are really hurting, and they started taking narcotics, and now are dependent on it. And they're usually on benzos.
Which are anti-anxiety meds.
Right. So, or sleep meds. So they're on either what we call the Z drugs, you know, Ambien or those drugs, or Ativan, Xanax, Klonopin. So what has changed for me in treating these patients is that they're all polypharmacy.
Oh,
I mean,
so,
it's not, yeah. when we get a purist, I mean, it's like exciting.
Wait, I only drink. What? Wow.
Right.
Yeah, how does that work?
Let's not be telling me the truth.
Right.
So tell me about a family, I mean, a person who's come in. Can you tell us like a story of someone who's come in? And then we're going to talk a little about, you know, what are the risks, physical risks to this population? And
well, a person that has come in, yes, I can tell you a story. I had a gentleman that came in who had a stellar career. I mean, certainly recognition and title and was extremely successful, used drugs back before he really started his career, you know, marijuana, LSD, Quaaludes, all of those drugs, kind of more an experimental phase, and then went on to his career, married, had the 2.4 kids or whatever, and is coming to the end of his career. Mm-hmm. So he's starting to have, you know, a sense of a loss of purpose, you know, where like, okay, what's life's second half?
Right.
And then, so he still has children in the house, college age children. But his parents got ill, so they came to live with them. So that's kind of even why we call it the sandwich generation. There's a lot more stressors.
Right.
You know, they have children in the house, and they are also taking care of their older parents. And then his wife started developing dementia, early Alzheimer's.
Oh.
So it was like, I mean, his whole world was torn upside down. You know, what was going to happen? What was he going to do? You know, looking forward to retirement, now has college-age children taking care of his parents and will at some point in time be taken. The life wasn't too bad right now, but, I mean, the diagnosis had been made. So he was totally, totally stressed out. And, again, used to using substances in the past as a coping strategy, it just became much more prevalent, and he couldn't do anything. I mean, he knew that he needed help.
And so he came in. And do you work with do you pull in the family, too, the kids and the
absolutely,
parents
absolutely.
And as many people as you can?
We the family is really, really important. The family needs to, because the disease affects the family. We all know that. So the a lot of times, even from a medical perspective, I mean, the family will have other medical symptoms that are related to their loved one's addiction, you know, because of the stress.
Right.
That it
sleep and blood pressure and
exactly.
Diabetes.
Exactly.
So,
you know, it's imperative for us to engage the individual's family from the onset of treatment.
So what kind of physical effects do the boomers have? I mean, does a long history of using drugs, even if it gets more intense as they get older, what kind of physical effects does it have on people?
Well, probably the most common thing, and with this gentleman, he had knee pain. So the most common thing I see is the chronic pain.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that has to be addressed with them. And, you know, we know long-term opiates from all the research that's out there. So long-term pain medications actually can, after 2 years, cause a hyperalgesia.
Right.
Where you have more pain than you perceive more pain
right.
than you actually have. So, you know, we have a very multidisciplinary approach to treatment.
So the physical aspect really has to get dealt with as well.
Absolutely. Physical, emotional, psychological, spiritual, wellness, all of that. We have a lot of non-pharmacological approaches to pain that we use there. And the boomers are very accepting to that. I mean, they really kind of are into alternative medicine.
Yes, we are, aren't we?
So that's a benefit of working with boomers in treatment. Are there any difficulties that you don't get with other populations?
I'm laughing because, okay, my background before addiction medicine was family practice and emergency room medicine. So I'd be in my office, and this is just like at the beginning, right before I went into addiction medicine full time. I would be in my office, and you'd have I'd have a patient come in. Let's say they were 68, 70, not a boomer. They would come in. You'd ask them what their symptoms were. You'd be able to examine them. They would talk to you. They'd say, "Well, what do you think, doc? You know, what's the problem?" And you'd go through like a differential diagnosis and say, okay, this is what I think we should use, and let's try this, and I'm going to see you back, let's say, in 2 weeks, something like that. Then the boomer patient would come in. And again, I'm a boomer, so I can say this. The boomer patient would walk into the office, no joke. They would have a computer printer,
yeah.
Sit down. At least the nurse would be able to get their vital signs. They would sit down, and then I'd walk into the office and say, okay, doc, this is what I have. This is the differential diagnosis, and this is the drug that I need.
That's great. And we're going to get, when we come back, we're going to talk about treating this generation, and we're talking about baby boomers and addiction. You're listening to Right Turn Radio. Here with Dr. Barbara Krantz of the Hanley Center in Florida.
Also a baby boomer, she
also
alleges.
Also a baby boomer.
Little older than both of you, though.
So, Dr. Krantz, you're sitting in your office. You've talked to this very compliant person who's older, and now all of a sudden you have a baby boomer in your office. They're sitting there saying, with their little
computer printout. It says on my iPad.
Right, with a printout saying, this is what I have, this is what I need, I know it all. How do you deal with that?
Well, my approach really has been to meet them where they're at, in the sense of helping them understand when we're talking about addiction, you know.
That who went to med school and who didn't?
Right. No, I don't say that. if the patient in front of me is a patient that is coming in with the disease of addiction, then I would help them understand the brain, talk to them about neurochemicals, talk to them about the imbalance in the neurochemicals, so to help them understand, you know, why they can't do this, why they shouldn't take this drug, you know, cross addiction, all of that. Very intellectual approach, because there really is seeking for knowledge in that generation, and I'm questioning authority, let me put it that way.
But also incredible access to information. I mean, so they type in, you know, do I have a drinking problem? And 55,000 things come up.
But it says on Facebook that I don't have a drinking problem, Abby. So.
That's right.
Are there strengths that this generation brings to treatment compared to other populations?
I believe that there is, because like I said, they're more open to alternative medicine, so you can really talk to them about nutrition and exercise and wellness. There's a real, what I have found is a real seeking for a sense of self, spirituality in that sense. They want to very much be a part of the solution of their treatment, and that helps a lot. The other thing, because they're used to talking in group, that when you put a group of baby boomers together, they definitely learn from their own cohorts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where the older generation don't want to talk in group, they want to talk more with one-on-one with a counselor, because there's still all that stigma. But the boomers are more than happy to talk in
they
groups.
They did drugs in groups. They get sober in groups.
Are they able to hide their addiction better than other generations?
Well, I mean, I've been asked that question before. And, you know, because the disease is progressive, maybe initially, but eventually, even from a strictly scientific point of view, you know, as we age, physiologically, things change. So you take the same amount of alcohol that you took at 40 that you're taking at 55 or 60, you really get more bang for your buck because of decrease in enzymes in the stomach and things like that. So, you know, they've been high functioning. They may have a high intellectual reserve. So maybe some of the psychometric tests that we're used to giving doesn't show, you know, a real serious deficit in that sense, I've seen.
Because you didn't have a pre-test, so you don't notice if people are falling apart because, you know, they're forgetting words, but, you know, you didn't know that they knew the entire Oxford English Dictionary beforehand.
Exactly, Abby.
But they're open. It sounds like they're open to treatment.
We are, aren't we?
Yeah. Open and opinionated.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, we've run into opinionated.
So, you know, it occurs to me, though, like when we do family work, it's the parents usually coming in or the spouse. And I can imagine when you guys are doing family work for the boomers, a lot of time it's the, you know, the children who are the grown, you know, the adult children who are coming in doing a lot of the family part.
Oh, that is so true, John. Probably the story that touched my heart the most was we had a gentleman, a boomer, I want to say maybe 5 years back. They tried to do an intervention. I mean, he really had an issue long before his career started, gave it up. He was using heroin, gave it up, did well during his career, and then started using prescription drugs non-medically. And his life was starting to fall apart, and they had an intervention. His wife was there and friends were there. And he was like, I'm fine. I'm still supporting the family. You guys are crazy. I can handle this. And his son went up to, and his son, I think, was around 12. I'm not sure the age, but his son went up to his bedroom, took a picture of his father, brought it back down to the intervention, and tore the picture in half in front of him. And he said, you are no longer a father for me.
Oh.
And you need to know that, Dad. And I was like, when this person was telling the story when he came in for his assessment, and, you know, history and physical, so to speak, I was almost in tears myself. I mean, so children, young adults, can be extremely impactful.
Yeah, and I think people have been impacted a long time by it.
Right.
So, I mean, and do you have advice for, like, suppose you think your mom is, you know, drinking too much, your dad's taking too many anti-anxiety medications, or, you know, after the surgery, you know, they never seem to have come off the pills, that kind of stuff. You know, are there special interventions that people need to do to get their family into help?
Yes. I guess the first thing is that they would just have to be aware, you know, kind of recognize the signs and symptoms that there may be a problem. So, you know, if all of a sudden their drinking is interfering with relationships, you know, they're falling down or they're having multiple blackouts and don't remember, you know, how they got home, things like that, you know, or behavior that's not usually them, you know, so they are an accountant and now they're forgetting to pay their bills, you know, and the husband or wife notices, or that emotional distancing, you know, where the mood swings are up and down, you know, you're walking on eggshells at home because you don't know how they're going to come in and how they're going to act, you know, and then the normal things besides behavior, but just, you know, unexplained bruises, multiple falls, you know, those are the things that we usually see. And those can be red flags to loved ones, you know, to say maybe there's a problem.
Right, and it's a, I mean, I mean, it's all those things would be something you would want to get checked out neurologically anyway. You know, if your parents falling right. or forgetting or sleeping a right. lot, and you know, so you know, that's one of the areas I feel like we need to do is get doctors to think this way.
Are we?
I couldn't agree with you more, Abby.
Yeah. Because it's like you come in and it's like grandpa's forgetting everything or mom's right. gets, you know, they'll say, oh, or, you know, she's probably just aging.
He's got an unsteady gait. Is that alcohol or is that, you know, the beginning of Parkinson's or whatever? So, Dr. Krantz, is there a breakdown that you're seeing? Is there a difference in any of the social classes where you're of the boomers that you're seeing kind of a higher incidence of addiction?
Statistically, from the stats that I have read, it's higher socioeconomic status. minorities also.
Yeah, one of the things
I said before, males.
Yeah, one of the things I read was that drinking, especially that as you, if you are, you know, if you are of a lower socioeconomic status, or if you are someone who's pretty ill, that you're more likely, you cut down on your drinking in general. And I thought that was really interesting. It's the other groups that were making up the difference.
Yes, we are.
I like how you're taking ownership for this, for the entire generation.
Speaking as a boomer.
You know, Dr. Krantz, I'm wondering why you got into this part of treatment and addiction studies. Why are you so interested in the boomers?
Well, I mean, that's a twofold question. So my interest in the boomers was that, you know, we had the senior program, mm-hmm. and that used to be like 55 and above, and then we had the male and female program. And what we started seeing, you know, with the increased admissions in the age group for the boomers, was they were extremely high-functioning and even much better physically well. So to put them on a unit with people that have oxygen concentrators and wheelchairs, it wasn't good. It didn't work well. So that's one of the reasons why we started the Boomer program. So in answer to your other question, why I got in the field, John, is that what you're asking?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Because I myself was in treatment at a young age, not as a boomer, but as a young age. So I kind of been there, done that, got the T-shirt.
ate the breakfast cereal.
And, you know, really understand what, not just book knowledge, really understand what people are going through, and that there's a lot of hope. For this is such a treatable disease.
Yes.
And if we catch it early on, I mean, there's a lot of hope and a freedom that person can get back to, you know, that they haven't had in a long time.
Yeah, when we come back, we're going to talk about hope and, you know, how to help families who have a family member who's affected.
We have a caller. Eddie, you're on Right Turn Radio. Do you have a question for Dr. Krantz?
Hi, yes. I've been listening to the whole show. It's very interesting. I just want to get my two cents in here that what I'm seeing just right in front of me as a person who is, quote, unquote, on the street and, you know, sees and associates with a lot of people both locally and around the world, I think so many people are really oblivious to the fact that now the people who are in the business of making billions of dollars from the sale of hard drugs, legal and illegal, they are really smart when it comes to maximizing their industry. And, man, we have created a farm system, no pun intended.
It is
such a short jump from being a 15-year-old pothead going to getting stuff out of the local dispensary through your older brother to being told, hey, just inhale a little plume of heroin smoke through the straw here. It's just like smoking weed. And let me make another comment. Do you think Vermont's current heroin epidemic came out of thin air? Or do you think the pothead culture of the last few decades in Vermont has had just a little bit to do with it?
That's a great question, Eddie, and I can hear the passion in your voice about this. And we do. I mean, Dr. Krantz, we were talking about that. The uptick in using, pain as one of the points of diagnosis in the end of the 90s created this boom in prescription opiates,
with
right?
People who think that using any kind of medication, including pot, is fine.
Or that gets written by a doctor.
Ooh,
in other words,
makes
the doctor prescribed it, I'm fine. So we do see that, and it is an issue. How do we get out of this mess, Dr. Krantz?
Well, I don't know if I have the whole answer to that.
You better.
but I think this is a disease. Prevention and education have to be the hallmark, right up front, before treatment. People need to understand that prescription drugs are not safe because they're prescription drugs, that, there are other methods of treating aches and pains non-pharmacologically. So you don't have to use a drug for everything. That quick fix kind of society mentality doesn't have to be in play. I think all of that would be extremely helpful, in moving forward with our society.
Is right. There a pill that we can take to get rid
That's
of these
right.
problems?
Right. But also, I also think that pretending that marijuana and, alcohol aren't really a problem is part of the problem, some people it's difficult for.
Absolutely.
So how do you recommend, hi, I'm, 40, my 65-year-old mom's having a little trouble. She seems to be, I'm worried that maybe she's taking too much. She's been on, painkillers for 3 months now. How do you recommend them getting help and getting educated?
Well, there are certainly numbers that they can call. They'd be more than welcome to call Hanley. They don't have to come to Hanley or Karen.
Mm-hmm.
There's, I think, even a live chat online at hanleycenter.org where they can give us information and we can give them information. And then if there's a lot of treatment centers in the Boston area too. So, there's, we'd be more than happy to help anybody over that live chat. That would be one avenue.
Okay. That's great, Dr. Krantz. We really appreciate you taking time today.
Thank you so much. I think it's been you've given a lot of good information.
Yeah, and I think we're going to check in with you in the future, kind of just touch base and see, what the trends are and what the state of the art with treatment, because this is going to, I'm sure we're in the field of treatment as well. It's going to present some challenges that we're looking for some good solutions for. Thank you so much. Dr. Barbara Krantz is the medical director of the Hanley Center in Florida. The Hanley Center is part of the Care and Treatment Centers Network, and they really specialize. One of their specialties is treating baby boomers and aging people with aging hippies. People with substance abuse problems. While she was talking, I was thinking about how I wake up with aches and pains every morning, and I have my regimen of Tylenol, acetaminophen, and stretching, and all those things. But I can imagine somebody might have gone through their whole life with no problem, and they get old and maybe they have some, orthopedic surgery or some kind of problems like that. They get prescribed, as we know, some doctors prescribe way too much inappropriate medication for smaller problems, and then all of a sudden they have a habit and they have a problem.
Well, we were talking to someone about how too many people are prescribed medications, and so many of these things, if you are having back problems that, painkillers only work for like a few days or a week. And then,
right.
At some point it starts backfiring on you. And if you just, core strengthening, exercise, stretching, all those things are so much better in the long run. But that's not what people are taught. They're taught, right, you know, take the pill, you'll feel better, and da da da.
I wonder, as time goes on, you know, if we're going to be seeing some of these the generation, the current adolescent generation, you know, they call it a generation like, you know, they like everything on Facebook. If they're even, you know, kind of more in tune with the idea of, you know, whatever the great, you know, pharmacological companies say I should do, or if they're going to step back and say, we need to find some more homeopathic ways of dealing with these things.
Yeah, more like Eddie saying, this is a company and this is a scam.
Right, right. Yeah. You could hear the anger in his voice. And we've talked about these things a lot, and we're going to continue the conversation about this. And, you know, in the last couple of weeks, there's been, Abby, as you know, a lot of interest in the public
about heroin
sector, about heroin.
Yes, you've been on television a number of times.
And what we're seeing, we haven't seen any specifically more. It's just we've known it's an epidemic, and we continue to talk about that. But we want people to know that they can reach out and get help. There's a lot of resources. You can go to Right Turn's website and find out more about some of the resources that are out there. Thank you for listening to the Right Turn Radio podcast. Please check us out on Facebook and at www.right-turn.org.